Good morning, friends. Welcome back. Nice to have you here. Lou, are you there?
I am here.
Good.
When we do an episode with a single verse, I always know that's a key episode. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, we're only going to be doing one verse today, friends, and that is verse 20 of chapter 7. And the reason I chose to do one is because it stirs up a lot of things within me, myself. Last time, I think we did from verse 14 to 19, and today we're only going to be doing 20. And it really brings up the whole question of how many gods there are in Indian mythology. We all know that the Gita, the Upanishads are of a very, very high level of intelligence, but then why do you have gods with heads of elephants and sitting on a mouse, and every home has multiple deities, Ganesh, Lakshmi, Dattatreya, Shiva, all of these different things on every screen? To me, that was one of the things that never made sense. And this verse talks about these various other gods and reaching them through their corresponding rites and what needs to be done. So just as an example, my mother, very religious woman, I remember had various rituals that she used to perform. And I never understood them, so I didn't condone them. And I sort of felt sorry that she had to do so much to pray to each one of these gods. So when I would be having my medical exams, like my final exam, every second was precious. And there was one particular religious occasion, of which there were every day some religious rite that had to be done. And she needed this particular grass that has like three blades of grass on one to do this prayer, this puja. And so she would say to me, please, can you go to the market? Which meant that I have to get on a bus, travel 30 minutes, go to this market, get that grass, and then take a bus back and wait for the bus, etc. It would be like 2 hours out of my day or more, which was very, she said, you could take your bus, your books on the bus and read. It's not the same. Anyway, I had to do it for her, and she was my mother. She would give her life for me. So I would get irritated to say, what are these rites that you have to do for these gods? And that's basically what this verse is talking about and also explains why there are so many gods. So let's go through the verse first, and I'll explain a little bit more afterwards with this personal bias that I have. So those deprived, verse 20, chapter 7, those deprived of wisdom, those who are not wise have not become self-realized, approach other gods with a small g. The one Brahman is with a capital G, capital S, for self. These are written as small gods with a small g.
Right.
Those deprived of wisdom approach other gods through their various desires and resorting to corresponding rites led by their own nature. Now, it may seem very confusing. And when the British looked at things like this, when they invaded India, they said these are the ramblings of civilization in its earliest stages.
Right.
Because they didn't understand it. And most people, if you read this, wouldn't understand it. But what it really means is that we all have a very strong mind, which has lots of thoughts. And the thought is, like I was studying for my medical exam, I said, I want to pass this exam. My focus was getting through the exam with great marks and doing well. My mother's focus was to do her prayers and, you know, get her son through medical school or whatever it was that she was desiring at that particular time.
Right.
So my way of doing what was studying. Her way of doing it was, go to the market, get me those blades of grass that I need because this God needs it for him to fulfill my desires. Doesn't make sense. Don't follow that ritual, please, guys, everybody. So what are these gods? When we have through our mind thoughts of wanting something, whether it be success in your studies or success for your son who's going to become a doctor, then you have a desire, and that desire is for a blade of grass or to get good marks or whatever. So you have to take the corresponding action. So we think about something, we desire something, and our desires go in that direction. Our actions are towards that direction. So what our ancient rishis, sages, munis, thousands of years ago said, we need to get these people to be thinking of God, not thinking about money or fame or beauty or studies or whatever. We need to get them thinking about how to become self-realized and how to become self-developed. So let's do this. Let us plant a God in every desire that somebody has. So if you have a desire for money, you're going to plant a God or goddess for money, which would be right. In the Hindu religion, Lakshmi. You have a desire for success, you say Ganesha, the God with the elephant head, and so on. There's God for everything. Nowadays, you have these apartment buildings, and they have little chawls in them, and they have a God for that, to say, pray to that God so you can get one of these condos or apartments for yourself. So the gods keep coming up, millions of gods. But what they are there for is when you're thinking of, I want an apartment, you should be able to think of the God. Why? Because the desire for whatever it is agitates you. Your desire for money gets right. You agitated, gets you anxious, gets you thinking. Your desire says, if I get the money, then this will happen. But if your desire is for that and you say, well, I need to focus on Lakshmi and that's it, Lakshmi will take care of everything, then your desire becomes less agitated. So the sages decided that they were going to plant a god or goddess everywhere, and that by doing that, it prevents you from becoming agitated when you follow your desire. And hopefully that desire moves away from the object that you desire to the god or goddess to whom you were praying in the first place. And I can tell you from personal experience that that does happen. When I was in India studying for my medical school, doing all this, being anxious, how are things going to work out? I was very, very focused on Ganesh. And I used to pray all the time and say, Ganesh, please give me the success. Go to the temple, pray, etc. And although now I realize that that was not the means to get to Brahman, it was actually providing for me a very strong substratum of being able to use that platform to pray and get to God. So there's an advantage to those rituals. There is an advantage as long as you understand why you're doing it and how it's coming about.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like a lighthouse, isn't it? I mean, we have trouble understanding the concept of Brahman, but we can understand the concept of Ganesh, something in a form that we can wrap our minds around and focus on.
Right, right. And if you have your concept on God and you don't do the rituals for the sake of the rituals, but you understand that, you know, these rituals are okay if you eliminate them. If your son is studying right. for his exams, you say, you know, today doesn't matter. Grass is just the grass. You know, I'm just going to pray. That would be the right thing to do instead of, you know, I remember standing in line outside a Ganesh temple for hours just to get in because the line was so long. And all of the people in front of me were people from taking the exams, saying, going in there for 1 second, 30 seconds and saying, God, please let me pass this exam. Spending 3-4 valuable hours doing that when right. all we had to do was to look within us. But as I said before, these are valuable techniques to use to practice success by focusing on a God that you can see, that you can visualize, that you can believe who is with you, but you don't have to do all of these things that cause you to waste your time. So why do we not surrender to God? Is because we have desires. Our mind produces a thought produces a desire, and that desire arises in you, and then you do actions to fulfill that desire. Either I act or I act through my friends or my family and say, get me that desire. But the I within us, what we should be doing is to identify with the self, the Atman, but instead we identify with the desires and we say those desires are mine. We identify with the body, we identify with the mind, we identify with our intellect, mm-hmm. and we identify with the desire. The I still identifies. So these desires are of many folds. So let's say there are four main desires. There are multiple, but let's say these are four. And in Sanskrit, they are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So seek the one desire is for safety and security, to protect ourselves, our bodies, our being. So we don't want to die because of that. So we need protection. Security is what we have a desire for, to protect ourselves. The next one is for sensual desires, which is pleasure of the sensual kind, to enjoy it, to have sensuality. And the third is to be good, to be a good person, to be a moral person, to be better, to improve our lives. And the last one, moksha, is the desire for immortality, to go to a better place. We talked about this. Did we talk about this in a previous episode, Lou? I don't remember. It's going to come up.
Sure. No, it doesn't sound terribly familiar. No.
Okay. So the three main out of these are the ones for wealth, which in Sanskrit is known as vitesh anna. And to make this that wealth, we want to make this life better for ourselves. The wealth gives you property, a nice home, you have assets for your comfort, for your protection, etc. All of that is embodied in this vitesh anna. The next one is for progeny, known as puttaresh anna, to continue my name after me. So we all think that we would love to live on forever, but we know that we're going to die. So because we know we're going to die, we say, I want a child. And in the past, maybe even now, you say, I want a son so my name can go on. Right. As if by having your name go on, you are going to be living forever. You're not. But you say, I want my name to carry on. What difference does it make if you're going to be dead, but you still want a son, or you want your daughter to carry your name along with her married name so that your name can carry on? So that is the progeny. The first one was wealth. The second desire is for progeny. And to do that, you also write a book. And you say, my name will be there. It'll be on the bookshelf forever, even after I die. Or a statue on which you want to give your name. Or you want to make a donation and put your name underneath that. And the last one is another location. It's known as lokeshana. Lokeshana is that after I leave this world, I should get a better environment. Right. So we all say, where am I going to go after this? Where am I going? So everybody says in different religions, you talk about going to heaven and you say, I want to go to heaven. And in the Hindu tradition, there are multiple levels of locations, the location. So we want to leave and go to a better location when we leave this earth.
So we want a reward for our life.
Yeah, we want a reward. We want to say, I want to live forever. But if you say, if I can't live forever, then at least send me to a better location than this one. So this prevents us from dropping our own small identity. Now, the desires are so difficult to control because no matter how rich you are, you still want more riches. Mm-hmm. And that's you know this from our president right now or from others. I shouldn't have said that. Sorry. But we know the wealthiest of people, no matter how many billions they say they have, the majority of them, I'm not saying all of them, the majority of them say, I want more, I want more. As beautiful as somebody is, she or he wants more beauty. And as powerful as somebody is, they want more power. Fame, they want more fame. It never ends. These desires are interminable, and they create more and more problems. Now, the other thing he talked about here was he said, corresponding rights. So let's see. He's talked about ignorant of the self, right? He says those desire deprived of wisdom, ignorance of the self, deprived of wisdom, approach other gods. We talked about what that means.
Right.
Through various desires. So everybody has a different desire, one for money. We talked about the different classes of desires, money or progeny or a better location. Resorting to corresponding rights led by their own nature. I think that's the last thing that in this verse we have to talk about.
Right.
So the corresponding rights refers to the fact that if you want to gain success and pass your medical school exam, you have to do whatever it takes to study, to go to classes, to attend, to focus on your, and have one single more pointed focus on your studies. And that's the corresponding rites. But instead, what has often happened is the priests have created these rituals that says, if you want this, then Ganesh only likes red flowers. You've got to get red flowers to put at his feet. Shiva, on the other hand, likes white flowers. Shiva does not like, I don't know the colors. I'm just saying that from my childhood, I remember my mother saying these things and say, you need to get this grass and these flowers and only this kind of incense or whatever. She was a wonderful woman. But this is what was taught to her by her, whoever taught her. So these things have to be given up. The corresponding rites are said to be more complicated for following these little gods than it is to follow Brahman.
Right.
Right. Brahman doesn't ask you for anything. Brahman doesn't say, I want you to go to the temple. I want flowers. I want fruits. I want vegetables. I need you to donate money to me. Nothing. Brahman says, just look inside you, meditate, and get to be one with yourself. Do good for others. Just it's being unselfish. Whereas these gods, because of the prayers and rituals and rites that have been prescribed, says you must put this flower, this vegetable, this money, this, that, go to the temple, do this. All of these rites make it more difficult to get to God with these small little gods. If you can eliminate those, and just sit in front of the statue of your God, Ganesh or Lakshmi or whatever, and just pray and use that time to reflect on within, then that God does not require anything else because everything is his. The fruits, the vegetables, the flowers, everything is his. So keep that in mind. I'm not saying to any of you, stop doing those rituals, but be focused on getting away from them and yet praying, because I found from personal experience that that prayer to those gods, in my case, Ganesh, is still very helpful to me, because I cannot envision, and I don't know if any of you can, envision when I close my eyes for a period of time, I cannot see myself focusing on Brahman. My mind wanders. But if I have a statue of Ganesh in front of me, my mind can focus. So that's verse 20, and from we are 10 verses away from the end of chapter 7, friends.
Already? Wow.
Yeah. 30 verses in chapter 7, and hopefully we'll be getting through that, and then we'll move on to chapter 8. So thank you very much, and hopefully you'll ask me questions. Write to me on Facebook or see if you have any comments, questions. I would love to hear from you.
As many people have. You've been getting a lot of response lately.
Yeah, I was really surprised how many people are listening and watching and writing, and I'm really, really pleased. So thank you very much, friends.